Have you ever come across anything like this before?
Never have.
It came from the giant boar. It was inside him, and I'm sure it was that little ball of iron that killed him.
There's a place high in the mountains, far to the west of here. It's where the spirit of the forest dwells, and it's a very dangerous place for humans. To enter there is certain death.
The spirit of the forest?
I've been told the beasts there are all giants, just as they were in the dawn of time.
What is up, everyone? Welcome back to the Wretched Movie Podcast, the podcast where everything is connected. I'm your host, Jacob Thompson, and joining me is my co-host, friend, and the person most likely to, if I was ever passed out in the woods and I needed help eating, he would chew up some tree bark and baby bird it into my mouth, Alex Perkins. Perk, how are you doing tonight?
I'm well, thanks, and no, I wouldn't.
Come on.
I would let you waste away.
You would help me out a little bit? Just a little chew with me with some birch?
I think probably not. I mean, maybe I probably just wouldn't have gone with, like, jerky, maybe.
I think there was potentially
better tactical options.
Yeah, that's fair. Welcome back to the show, everyone. This is the podcast where every week Perk and I review a movie connected to the last one we watched. If you like our show, you can follow us on podcast services and YouTube and TikTok. Tell your friends about it and come watch the movies with us. Last week, we watched Annihilation. And to get to this week's movie, it was a bit of a hurdle, but I got there, all right? Annihilation. Oscar Isaac was in Star Wars Episode 7, which also featured Mark Hamill, who was in the voice cast for Nausicaä of the Valley of the Wind, which featured a voice actress named Tress McNeil in the dub, who's also in the dub of Princess Mononoke. Boom. Love to see it. And this kicks off, we're going to be doing some anime movies for the next few episodes of the podcast. And then we're going to try to stay international while the SAG-AFTRA and writer strikes are going on. Enough wind up. Perk, why don't you introduce this week's movie for us, Princess Mononoke.
Yeah, all right, sure. Princess Mononoke is a 1997 joint, directed by Hayao Miyazaki of Studio Ghibli. It is starring different people based on which version you watched, which we watched separate versions. Mm-hmm. It's basically about a young prince who gets cursed fighting a demon and has to go on an adventure and meets a daughter of a god of the wolf spirit, and they try to save the forests while also not killing all the humans. Couple fun facts, which funnily enough, I didn't know about, but I maybe agree with the producers. Apparently the producers wanted to show a shorter cut because they thought it was too long and it would lose American audiences. And Miyazaki was so pissed by the cut that they made on Nausicaä when it was released that he said no. And they sent him a katana that was engraved that said no cuts.
Oh, I heard about that. Yeah, that's pretty badass, though. That's pretty badass.
Yeah, it's a good bit for sure. This was also Miyazaki himself personally corrected or redrew 80,000 cells of animation.
Insane.
I know.
Did you, when you saw it, did you see that clip of the documentary after it finished?
Yes. Just a short clip.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which, yeah. So Perk and I were able to see it in theaters, thankfully, and they showed a clip from the documentary about Studio Ghibli and Miyazaki. And I assume we saw the same one. It was from Ponyo.
Mm-hmm.
And it was how Miyazaki looks at every single frame that's going to be put in the film, which is insane. And if he doesn't like it, he'll note it up himself or redraw it himself, which is scary to me of just the amount this man has to work. And I've heard from the documentary, people who've seen it, he's kind of a madman, but a workaholic, but produces good movies. Perk, you saw this yesterday, correct?
Yes.
All right. So why don't you go first since you're a little more fresh on your thoughts?
I loved it. I thought it was really good. It was just a very good time. It's incredibly gorgeous. I think the big screen was the perfect place to see it. The animation, it holds up so well. It looks much better than most of the movies that are coming out today.
Mm-hmm.
Every shot is a painting because it literally is.
Yeah.
You know? So, but yeah, overall, I think pretty much everything worked really well. I only had one gripe, and I agree with the producers. I think it was a little too long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's 2 hours and 14 minutes, which is a bit
like not too long, but I just feel like pacing wise, it drags a couple times, and we could have maybe. There's a few things that I think could have maybe been snipped.
Sure. Yeah, I really love this movie. I agree with you. I think the imagery is gorgeous. Like, not just the animation, but also just, like, the design of characters and creatures and the mm-hmm. the world they're in is all just beautiful and also kind of creepy at times and, you know, a little scary and spooky.
Yeah, definitely, like, a little bit higher on the scare scale than I was expecting from a Ghibli movie.
Well, and the funny thing is, so like I said last episode, I've only seen a few Ghibli films, and one of those is Nausicaä. And this does feel like another take at Nausicaä, like kind of a updated version. Not to say that Nausicaä needed updating, but just like a similar story. You know, very environmental focused, and, you know, this kind of group of people coming together to overcome this kind of creature or supernatural creature kind of deal. And yeah, I think I agree that it's a little bit long, but I was never too. I was always engaged. And yeah, I think beautiful is the best word I can use for this film. Like, it was just really gorgeous to look at, and I also really appreciated the sets of characters we got and how developed each of them were, and how, like, the Ironworks people aren't necessarily bad people, even though they're objectively hurting the environment and that's causing all these other issues. Like, they're trying to do good for the people they are, you know, not every person there is like evil. And then same with Mononoke's kind of group, and then Asuka kind of in the middle trying to parse it all. It was really, really interesting. I liked how they kind of pit these groups of characters against each other.
Yeah, so I agree. I think, and sorry that James Cameron has to catch strays here, but this movie makes the story and characters of Avatar just look so bad. So bad in comparison. Because in Avatar, there's no nuance at all. None.
Yep.
It is just base level human evil. Human evil guy. Look at this maniacally laughing evil, like, entrepreneur dude. Like, it's just so clearly painted as the guys who are destroying the environment are bad. Whereas in Mononoke, you've got Lady Ibushi, who you would think is just default villain trying to destroy the forest spirit, except she is doing all of that to protect her people. She's started a community of a lot of women by freeing them from brothels and bringing them into a community. She takes time and resources to save lepers and have them be participating in the community as well. Like, from everything we can see of the community itself, it seems to be great. And it's based on, like, what Ibushi did. She blazed this whole trail for her people and built it up there. And it runs on extracting iron, which unfortunately is at the cost of nature. So her motivations are not seated in evil. It's seated in protecting her people, protecting what she built, and those she cares for and everything she cares about. So there's so much depth to her as a, like, villain. It's hard to even really call her a villain, but as an antagonist, she has so many more layers than evil American man bad.
Right. 100%. Though I would argue there is a maniacal villain, which is the Shogun, who we never see, and who wants the head of a god because he wants to be immortal, right? But that's like a subplot that just kind of it comes into a head in the final act. And we have kind of Jiro and his kind of crew, which are, God, when they're in the fucking boar skins, that stuff is so creepy, man.
Oh,
like, how they move along the ground. Like, yeah, there's a lot of creepy stuff. Like, the opening scene with the demon boar and, like, the worm curse is, like, disgusting. And then we get that, that comes back at the end. And then also, like, the deer god is very unsettling with, like, the human face that can kind of shape shift.
That's got to be seated in some actual mythology, right?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. I think also the forest spirits.
Otherwise, why would it look so naff?
Right. I think the forest spirits as well are kind of traditional Japanese mythology, because there are Koroks in Zelda, which I'm like, they have to be inspired by the same thing. Like, this has got to be these little kind of forest spirits. But
they are, they're one of my favorite parts. Just such a cool, calming presence in the forest.
Yeah. It's a really interesting and beautiful film. And I like Ashitaka being like, I got to figure out what to do here. Because I don't even know what I would do in his situation. It's like, because he's sympathetic with the Ironworks people. But he's also sympathetic with Princess Mononoke and their plight. And he's trying to avenge his kind of village and what happened to them. He's also trying to cure himself. Like, he's got a lot going on, to the point where I'm kind of surprised this movie is named after Princess Mononoke, because she has, like, not a ton of scenes or lines compared to some other characters. So I think it was kind of interesting that the movie is filmed or is named after her.
Yeah, I also felt the same. I'm not sure necessarily it should have been named after her. I think she's, you know, a great presence and she has a good character. Her values are pretty well fleshed out. But yeah, she is more of like a minor protagonist almost. Obviously, like, Ashitaka is the main character of the movie, but they have a dichotomy and they work together, but it's because she is not, Princess Mononoke is not the main character, nor is she the object plot goal of the movie, which usually those are what you're going to name your film after, and not so much, but
yeah, I feel like it should have been called something like, I don't know, like the Curse of the Woods or something like that. Like, I don't think it should be named after Ashitaka, but it's weird comparing to Nausicaa, because, like, the movie's named after Nausicaa because she is the main character and she drives the plot and it's her POV.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we don't even see the Prince Mononoke fight at the end when the boars rush in to try and rush the hill. I mean, that happens off screen. Mm-hmm. So it's just very interesting to me that that's what the name of the movie is, but doesn't take away from the film itself, which is a very interesting choice.
Right. And then she, unfortunately, she kind of gets damseled a little bit at the end.
A little bit, yeah. Yeah.
It's not a glaring problem for me, because the rest of the movie she's had so much agency and hasn't necessarily really needed help up until the end. But then, yeah, she kind of has to be like, help me, Ashitaka type beat at the very end there.
Right. Yeah, I was hoping to get more of her backstory as well. Because
we get a little bit, but yeah,
we get a little bit of, like, basically the mother wolf, like, found her as a baby, I think, and kind of brought her in.
The parents threw the baby at her and ran away.
Yeah. But someone mentioned earlier in the film that, like, the wolves, like, stole her soul or something like that. Maybe that's just a figure of speech of saying, like, she belongs to them. But I thought there's gonna be some more, cause there's like, if the forest dies and she dies. So I thought there's gonna be something like that of, like, maybe breaking the curse with her or something, but that just doesn't really end up happening. But she was a very cool character, especially in the beginning when she's wearing her mask and performing raids. Like, the way she moved was also freaking awesome when she, like, breaks into the Ironworks to try and kill Lady Ebisu. That was sick.
The action, I think, was great, which once again is, like, not something I'm overly familiar with Ghibli movies having a ton of action set pieces, but the way it was shot, the way it was drawn, the editing, the action itself, I think, was really well done.
It was super clean, very kind of minimalist. The sound design was incredible, of, like, knives and swords clanging. Yeah, I think was really well done.
And also in my notes, I put down quiet gore.
Yeah.
Because you get a lot of
totally forgot about that.
Just like a whiz of an arrow and then a guy's head pops off, which
our arms, I was like, holy shit. And, like, in the theater, I don't know about you, but, like, what, when the guy's head pops off, people start, like, laughing, giggling a little bit. I'm like, this is not a laughing matter, this is kind of fucked, man. Like, this dude got so strong from this demon curse, he's, like, mutilating people. I was not expecting that level of gore in this film.
Me neither.
Sure.
And I think it's pretty reserved, and it's like your classic prequel Star Wars, where every slash of a lightsaber is minus an appendage.
Right.
I thought it was a very interesting choice, because usually something like that, like an action scene where someone gets their arm shot off. That is accompanied with like a big bombastic score, and instead it's just like the whiz of an arrow and almost silence, and it's just like, oh wow, just kind of an interesting juxtaposition, which I it took me off guard, but I like it.
It was very unique, and that's what I appreciate about anime as a medium, is like it doesn't babysit the audience. Like the most popular genre of anime is shonen, which is made for young men, and this isn't a shonen by any means, but like there's blood and people getting hurt. Like they're not babying people. It's like, okay, if you get punched, it's gonna look like that, as opposed to like, I don't know, other cartoons where people get hurt and they bounce back, you know, totally fine. So I just appreciate that, like, yeah, this is like a fucked up world, bad shit's happening, like you need to see it and be aware of it, you know.
Definitely.
I wanted to give a shout out. I mean, this goes by what you're saying about the every frame of painting thing, but I just love the attention to detail. One of the first things I noticed was the very opening scene. Ashitaka is running up that tower to see where the boar is, you know, and there's a shot of him climbing up and you can see there's mud on the bottom of his feet. And it's like, yeah, because he's barefoot. And it's like, there's that little bit. I'm like, you can just tell they thought about everything and who these characters are, where they live, what they do. And I love that. And this, the attention to detail is just like all over this movie. It's incredible.
And on top of that too, like the amount of effort that had to go in, some of those scenes with like the boar demon running around.
Oh my God. I can't even imagine.
I can't even imagine how much time it took to even draw one frame of that.
Yeah.
And they had to do it, you know, 40 times for a 3-second shot or something.
With all the worms wriggling and everything. Like,
yeah.
I was thinking about that too with the forest spirit guys. I'm blanking on their names. It's like Kodomo or something like that. Kodama, I think. There's a where they're all up in the trees watching the Nightwalker, and all their heads are shaking, but they're all like shaking differently. And it's like, how did they keep track of which head was moving where in these frames so they could like all be different? Like, wild. Yeah, absolutely wild.
No, it's nonsense. It had to have been so difficult. It's an art that I think is getting lost a little bit. We're getting some of it back, but with so much of that of like 3D animation and CG animation, which makes the whole process a lot easier, but it kind of takes some of the life out of it. It almost feels like
it can look good. It started out very, very bad. It's definitely getting better, and with certain like shading, and you can make it look better. I'm all for making animators' lives easier if they, you know, are down for. Because I know, obviously, AI is a massive thing right now, and I know Miyazaki himself has like said this is an atrocity against humanity. but I've seen some animators just like commenting on posts, be like, you know, if we could use AI to just like color the frames, that'd be amazing. Because the most tedious thing is putting in all the colors after you do it. So like stuff like if we can use things as tools to help, that they're all agreed to, I'm all for it. But yeah, like the amount of time some of these shots must have taken is just absolutely insane. But yeah, I don't have too much more to say. The last thing I make sure I need to say is the best character in the movie is his elk, Yuktul. Yeah. Absolutely goated status.
Yeah, dude is awesome. I love the presence of the animal companion who's just like the nicest, like the goodest boy.
And just down for whatever needs to be done, you know?
He's hanging out. Like, Mans is dead on the shore, and he's like, yeah, I'm good here.
Also, it's just like, it's the cool animal to ride around, because he can do, like, little hops, and he's got the horns. He, like, grabs his horn to get up on top of him. It's sick.
And then the other thing I wanted to touch on is I really like the score. Especially in the final moments when everything is repopulated with plants and flowers and trees. The piano score in the background is absolutely gorgeous. I think a couple times, maybe there's some horns involved that get a little over the top for me, but some of the more beautiful moments are so perfectly accentuated with just lovely piano music. And then also, one of the things I appreciate most about a score is the awareness of when to reserve it. There are a lot of good moments of silence where there's no score at all, and it allows a moment to breathe. And they do that a number of times, I think pretty effectively in this movie.
Yeah, I I think when the first time Ashitaka enters the pond area and kind of sees the deer god through the trees is really quiet. And I just, it really pulled you in, was really engaging.
Adds to the effect for sure.
Yeah, that was great. What did you think of the ending overall?
I don't know. I wasn't sure how it was, how it could end other than with the death of the forest spirit, because it's like a tale of warning, but also they have these sentient animals who are clearly hyper intelligent, and they had to do away with that somehow. So the death of the forest spirit makes sense on a way to kind of get rid of that. But,
yeah. It kind of, to me, the theme of this movie felt like fuck around and find out kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. Of like, yes, we can try to reverse our ways with harming the environment, but some damage is irreversible. Like, yeah, after this movie ends, like everything kind of starts to grow back. It's like, okay, next time we have another second chance, but also we lost something in the way, in the, you know.
Yeah, and I think it's a good message, but yeah, I was a little sad, obviously.
Yeah. I will say I do think kind of the romance between Ashitaka and Momonosuke felt a little bit rushed. And the fact that I think it's kind of funny that when he leaves the village at the beginning, I assume the girl that they has kind of a crush on, he's like, oh, she's like, oh, you're in my heart. He's like, you're in my heart too. And she gives him the necklace. Like, remember me. And he's like, gives it to Momonosuke like immediately. It's like, dude, what about the girl back in your own village?
It's, lost in translation, maybe, but maybe. In the dub, it's his sister. It's explicit that it's his sister.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
That would clear that up a little bit, yeah.
Okay, yeah, definitely. To me, they both said, you're in my heart. I'm like, oh, is this some, like, a girl waiting at home for him? Okay, it's his sister. That helps out a lot. Because I was like, man, you gave that thing away, like, pretty quick to a new girl you just met.
Right.
But that's funny. So, yeah, that's Princess Mononoke. I don't have any recommendations besides Nausicaa, because I think they're very similar. And
other Ghibli. Yeah, I haven't seen Nausicaa. Stuff. I might check it out.
It's great. I think I might... It's hard. I have to watch it again. I might like it better than this one a little bit, just because I like Nausicaa as a character so much. But very hard to say. All right, well, that is our review for this week. Before I reveal, watch next week's time for some bonus reviews. Perk, you're on the bench. You watch nothing. But thankfully, I got a few for you to discuss. So when I saw Mononoke on Saturday, I also saw Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem, the double feature action.
I was wondering if you were going to be able to see it.
I was. I saw it with my roommate, and we had such a blast with this film, man. It is so fun, and I highly recommend you see it. I think you'd really dig it.
Okay.
The animation, I think, obviously is inspired by Spider-Verse, but it once you're in it, it feels so different because it's a lot rougher, and it feels like my roommate was saying, like, it Spider-Verse is like a comic book, like you can tell with like the dots and like everything and the words coming out. This feels like a sketchbook on like a high school kid's like notebook, you know, like it's a little more rough and kind of scratchy and a little bit like uglier, but like in a beautiful way, if that makes sense.
No, I'm picking up what you're putting down.
And especially the lighting is incredible in this film. Like how they did the lighting was just inspired, and I absolutely loved it. But yeah, I mean, we were seeing it from the promo material, but like having actual teenagers play the turtles and have them all be in the room booth together, recording together, was just incredible. Their banter and chemistry was just off the charts, and they just really sold this movie, just like the heart of those characters. That being said, I think my favorite performance, and I didn't put two and two together that she was in the movie, but Ayo Edebiri as April O'Neil was fucking incredible. She's from The Bear, for those who don't know, and I love her in The Bear, but she was so good as April, is kind of this anxious person that's trying to be a reporter. And her relationship with the turtles is really fun, and she's just a great support character.
She was awesome. You're missing her greatest role, though. I think should leave season 3.
That's true. That is true. So, yeah, she's popping up everywhere lately, and I'm here for it because she's one of my favorite actors right now. So yeah, she was probably my favorite performance, but I mean, Ice Cube killed it. Paul Rudd is hilarious. Like, the voice cast is absolutely cracked in this film, and the story is like genuinely good and like moving. It's not just like a cookie cutter superhero story. Like, I think they do a really good job framing the turtles within this very like they just want to be accepted, and the way they explore that is really, really beautiful and nice. So yeah, I loved it. I don't get the criticism of this movie. Honestly, I've seen some and I'm just like, I just don't understand. Like, I think they absolutely knocked it out of the park. So definitely check it out if you're a fan of Turtles or animation or anything, or the voice gag. Just go see this movie, please. I need a second one. They gave it a cliffhanger. And yeah, I'm very excited about it. Another thing I watched, I finished an anime called A Place Farther Than the Universe. I talked about this a long time ago on the podcast. I watched about half of it, and then I moved and all this stuff, and I finally finished it with my roommates a few days ago. This is about a group of four high school girls that want to go to Antarctica to kind of, well, they want to go for different reasons, but it's basically kind of like make something of their youth and kind of do something big before kind of becoming adults. And it's a really beautiful show, really cute. It's really interesting to see, because I mean, it's in the real world. It's all real stuff. It's like, yeah, how would you get to Antarctica if you actually wanted to go? It's kind of like a question that it's kind of reminded me of like kind of Walter Mitty, where that film has a very unique setting of like being in a dying magazine. This is someone like, yeah, like how would you get to Antarctica if you're like in high school? So that was really cool. And it's a really beautiful story of friendship and getting to know new people and trying to achieve something, and really gorgeous, you know, shots of the landscape out there. And yeah, just a really wholesome, feel good show. Doesn't do anything like super amazing, but it's just kind of solid all around. So that's that one. And then I got two more quick ones for you, Perk.
Okay.
You watched Invincible, right?
Yes, the first season.
So they released a bonus episode a few weeks ago.
Okay.
Ahead of the new season coming out in November. It's an hour long Adam Eve origin story special.
Oh.
And it shows her backstory and how she became Adam Eve. And it's good, but it is fucked. I mean, Invincible is not, as always, kind of fucked up one way or another. But, like, man, her story is not pretty or pleasant to watch. Surprisingly, has a lot of similarities with the Ninja Turtles movie. But if you like Invincible, definitely watch it and check it out. It's more of really dark superhero stuff. Really good action choreography. I think it's some of my favorite in the series so far. I had some criticism of season one of, I don't love how the characters move all the time. I think some of the animation, they're definitely saving money in certain shots in that show and then, you know, doing more with the action later. But great action choreography, great story. But yeah, it'll fuck you up a little bit with some of the stuff that's in that. So check that out if you are an Invincible fan.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'm an Invincible fan. Undoubtedly, I liked the first season, but
mm-hmm.
did I just like when it actually gets going? Because I know I was bored out of my mind the first however many episodes before the mm-hmm. twist.
Mm-hmm. I think the twist doesn't happen to the last episode, I'm pretty sure.
Is that right?
I think so.
No,
I mean, there's hints. There's
that,
hints.
Doesn't it? Maybe. Is it like a longer
episode? It's very close to the end that we get the twist. And there's hints of something going on before that.
Yeah, I was anticipating, because a lot of people compared it to The Boys, which I think is probably an unfair characterization, but I was expecting it to be kind of subversive, and it is in a way, but it's still kind of a mainline like superhero story, just with a twist.
Yeah. Actually, no, you're right. I'm sorry. The twist happens at the end of the first episode. And
yeah,
then,
okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was thinking about something else. Yeah.
Before the realization is what I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
Like when it's just like typical high school kid learning his powers and all that.
I think that's intentional, right? They want you to think it's a normal superhero story, and then that's what makes it subversive. And then after that, I think it's very subversive.
I am looking forward to seeing what the next season brings too, because I know it's Kirkman, right?
Yep. Walking
Who
Dead
did
guy.
The Walking Dead. He did the good seasons of The Walking Dead.
Oh, he wrote the comic. The Walking Dead comic, and then the Invincible comic.
I think he jumped ship after like three seasons of the show or something.
I think that's about right. Yeah, he worked on the show as well.
Makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm almost looking forward to it. It can be kind of a hard watch at times, similar to The Boys, just because of grossness and how fucked up people can be.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm also looking forward to it. That's another show with a great voice cast. But yeah, that should be coming back in November, I think. And then the last thing I watched, I won't say too much about this, but there was a big milestone One Piece episode last weekend, Gear 5. Basically, the main character was getting a new power-up that's been people who've read the manga have been waiting for a very long time because, minor spoilers, but whatever. Main character gets...
Don't worry, I'm not going to watch One Piece.
Well, I know you're not, but anybody listening, if they care, turn it up now. Main character Luffy is made out of rubber, as you know, Perk. You can kind of stretch and whatever. Mm-hmm. And he's gotten power-ups in the past that have kind of allowed him to do a little bit more crazy things, but it's still like he's made out of rubber. And this episode, we find out that that's not actually what his power is. He actually, when he gets fully awakened, he has essentially toon powers. Think of like the Mask, where where he eyes pop out of his head. Yeah, he can stretch to any form he wants to, and that he can make other people do the same thing. And so this is the first episode we actually got to see that in action. And I don't know if it was this episode, but I know that Toei, the people who produced it, brought in Warner Brothers animators to help make it have that kind of Mickey Mouse, old school Looney Tunes look. Which is really cool. So I'm excited to see that kind of progress more as the fight goes. But the episode itself, good and bad. Like, the scenes that they were showing off, they were really showing off. But because they spent all their animation budget on a very few things, they replayed the same clip 3 times. There was flashbacks. It's just really bad pacing in this episode. It's like, we spent all our money in this one part. So I'm hoping it evens out after this. But it was really cool to see. And it was a big moment for the One Piece community. So that was fun. But
nice.
Yeah, I'm excited to see more of that fight. And then I'm also excited for the live action show later this month. Praying it's good. It looks pretty good from the most recent trailer, so I'm holding out hope for it. But there we go. That's all my bonus reviews for this week. And next week, we're going to be watching another Ghibli film, Howl's Moving Castle, following director Miyazaki to that. And that is streaming on HBO Max. I think there should be sub and dub on the Max, so whatever you want to do there. But until next time, thanks for watching. Bye.
Bye-bye.